Our special guest, Bill Sweet, joins us in a moment as we talk about prayer research, how it works, positive and negative prayer. Stand by. Welcome back, Bill Sweet, with us. Bill was interested in paranormal phenomena, including the phenomena of prayer, for some time, and through meeting the founders of Spindrift, Bruce and John Klingbeil, Bill began to grasp new ways of applying consciousness and research into very special spirituality. He was the president of Spindrift for years, and here he is on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the program, Bill. Good to have you with us.
Well, Merry Christmas, George.
Thank you. You know, you too.
In my book, A Journey into Prayer, I quote Michael Dell, founder of Dell Computer. Michael Dell said, "The only thing faster than a computer chip is telepathy." And then last night I saw a story on the news about the pizza computer being developed. I don't know if you saw this.
No, I didn't see that.
The pizza pizza computer reads the eye responses of a customer and knows what the subconscious mind of a customer decides he wants before the customer even knows what he wants. And then it puts the order in, and the order is going in before the person has even decided what they wanted.
Based on what they're probably looking at on a chart or something like that?
Yes, you probably heard about that. This
is about as
close to electronic telepathy as one can get. If they look at a menu and the menu has the, you know, thick crust, thin crust, how much cheese, and all the toppings, and the eye responses are subconscious and they happen faster than the conscious mind knows, and the computer is ahead of the person. It's pretty wild.
A lot of ad agencies now, Bill, are experimenting with technology just like that, where let's say they have a car commercial of a good-looking girl or guy, and they will set up in their studios a test of some people, and they'll have them all wired up, and with this new technology, they will monitor this commercial and where their eyes are at during the commercial. Are they looking at the car? Are they looking at the girl or the guy? Are they looking at the tires? What are they looking at? And then that's how they judge their advertising for their greatest impact. It's amazing what science is doing now.
It is amazing. And the group I'm with, Spindrift, made a prediction. I think it's a pretty modest prediction, that skeptics of all things psychic and spiritual, they won't accept anything that a believer in psychic and spiritual experiences says. But if a psychic experience can be shown as a possibility by science first, then the skeptic might bend a little and look into it. And you mentioned earlier on your interview that scientists don't want to look into some of these issues about consciousness. It was a rather frustrating give and take you were having.
Mm-hmm.
And skeptics and science, and just skeptics generally, love to diagnose people who are emotionally disturbed, who are attracted to work in religion and parapsychology, and that's all they look at. And the skeptics and the atheists also revel over fraud going on. They like to point that out, and the control that religion and psychic claims have over people's lives. That describes some of the surface reasons why consciousness studies aren't being taken seriously. Now, Spindrift describes the subsurface evidence for the resistance. What is going on in the subconscious mind? Spindrift postulates that our subconscious defense mechanisms gang up on us and contribute to us looking foolish for believing in anything paranormal. The defense mechanism successfully disrupt and throw us off when we're trying to make progress in explaining spiritual and psychic effects going on in our world. And so this is one of the actual things that Spindrift has been discovering. Why is there a little interest in some of these new breakthroughs going on in quantum physics and in consciousness research? Why aren't the dots being connected that there's something spiritual and psychic that's a parallel to all this? And what happened was the founders of Spindrift, Bruce and John Klingbeil, a father and son team, they worked professionally as Christian Science practitioners. And as Christian Science practitioners, Bruce and John Klingbeil noticed that people would initially acknowledge their spiritual and psychic experiences, then later some would forget they had the experiences or they dismissed them as no big deal. Hearing such changes in attitude, Bruce Klingbeil began to wonder what is going on and started looking into triggering mechanisms are caused by the defense mechanisms. I started looking into psychology and extended defense mechanisms from psychology into parapsychology, into the mental realm, and why this goes on. And it's really an interesting thing. It seems that I don't know if there's a whole lot of other things like this, but when it comes to the paranormal, or it's like this, our defense mechanisms, even if we're interested in the subject, blur our experiences so we can't quite get a fix on what happens to us. And it also tries to thwart us getting too interested in these things because it throws us off from our daily routines. And it is true. I have known people that have had regular lives, and some people who have had great qualifications and everything, and they have an extraordinary experience, a psychic experience, a spiritual experience, and all of a sudden, everything goes in that direction, and everything normal in their life, so-called normal, gets thrown off, and they get all wrapped up in it. Well, the defense mechanisms try to get us back on track. So sometimes they have a good reason for doing it. Other times, you wonder if it's almost a conspirational reason, because all this activity we know from people you interview all the time are having these extraordinary experiences. Why isn't science really interested in looking into them? It's kind of a strange thing because sure it's is. Part of the human experience.
Bill, when you talk about prayer, what do you mean by that?
Well, what we're talking about in prayer is this spiritual force that has been able to enrich a lot of people's lives, but it brings quality into people's lives. And what Spindrift has done is it's done three things. It's studied two types of prayer, and it's studied the defense mechanisms. Those are the three contributions to science that we think that Spindrift has really made. And what we did to test prayer is that we took people who had experiences in prayer and other people who didn't have experiences, people from different backgrounds, and we wanted to see what their thoughts did, because again, it kind of ties in with this earlier thought too. There's in an increasingly scientific society, there's seems to be a skepticism about any of these things being true and having any validity. Yet again, it's not connecting the dots, because they are discovering more and more things about consciousness that are really bizarre, but they just haven't connected the dots yet. So what Spindrift wanted to do is to have some kind of argument that would help in a modern society show that spirituality and prayer actually does something. So in order to find something that we could afford to test and we could handle, the Spindrift team mostly did prayer-to-plant experiments. We had plants and things on a seed level and lower organisms that would be prayed for in a controlled environment in the Spindrift laboratory, and people would pray over some need that the organism had. It would either be undernourished or had too much ultraviolet light, or it needed more water. There'd be some kind of stress on the organism, so there was actually something to pray for. And then the control group would be off to the side that is not touched by thought or prayer, and a comparison would be made. And we would find that some people were able to affect positive, beneficial changes in plants and seeds and lower organisms. And what we found is that people were able to get three kinds of results. Some people, one result wasn't a result. Some people were not able to affect a change. Another result was that some people were able to benefit the organism, and then the other change is that some people thought they were doing good, but they were actually cyclically manipulating the organism and pushing it around, but it wasn't helping the organism, it was actually pushing in directions that weren't best for it. So we had these three things that we could compare. And you asked me about prayer. Well, the two styles of prayer that Spindrift tested, we categorize this way. Spindrift tested what it has been called goal-directed prayer. In theological terms,
what is that?
Most people think of it as petitionary prayer. It's when you are asking for a specific goal to be achieved. Goal-directed, you're asking for a goal to come about. That is a common prayer. People are aware of it. The scientific, we kind of admitted more of a petitionary prayer, more scientific, but kind of goal-directed. This type of prayer sometimes hits the mark and does a beneficial effect on a plant, but most of the time with goal-directed prayer, there's always the problem of the human ego of getting in there and making a goal that isn't necessarily the right one, and you end up doing more harm than good. So goal-directed prayer is kind of problematic. If it is really spiritually initiated, you're all right, but sometimes it isn't. The second type of prayer that Spindrift tested that contrasted goal-directed prayer, Spindrift calls non-goal-directed prayer. Non-goal-directed prayer is when you try to get the no goals, no agendas, get that all in your mind, and you're just encompassing what you're praying for with love and with the best intention, and and you're trying to feed it the best qualities of thought and what is best for it, and you're not outlining what specifically will happen to it. We found that non-goal-directed prayer is obviously, from the sound of it, is more spiritual, but we found it is a more effective prayer because it only goes in the direction of what will benefit. It doesn't go in any other direction of pushing things around or manipulating or getting the ego involved. So these two patterns were how we were able to track on a computer screen two different effects produced by two different thought forces. Goal-directed prayer pushed in a certain pattern, and non-goal-directed prayer pushed another pattern. And the reason you could just distinguish the two is that a lot of research was done ahead of time on the botanical elements of the different plant systems that were being prayed for, and we knew what a plant needed at a certain point in time to be benefited, and what it needed, and the graph would go up and down, sideways. These are all patterns that are science understands. Probably the easiest one to describe is the yeast test. There are actually scientists who dedicate their whole lives to studying yeast, and they have these patterns that you can get, and we put these patterns in the computer, and when somebody prayed a non-goal-directed prayer, and it healed the plant, that the pattern that they prayed would eclipse the pattern that's in the computer, and that would show that a proper benefit was given to the plant. In contrast, a goal-directed prayer would not. It would miss that. It would create a pattern, but it would be patterns that didn't relate to order or norms or reference any kind of healing pattern.
Bill, did the type of goal determine the success of the prayer?
You could say that. If a goal was in full of love and intention, you were all right. And then sometimes people just happen to answer the right thing, but again, in our culture, which is very goal-directed to begin with, it is usually us thinking consciously and unconsciously an agenda of getting the goal achieved that we want. And we usually think in terms of material goals. So if you're trying to have a spiritual goal, and our whole orientation is to have a material goal, I want this car, I want to win this game, that type of attitude, you are going to have a hard time getting the goal to be a spiritual goal because it's already been influenced by what's going on from the viewpoint of the subconscious mind of a material goal. So yes, it very much helps to purify goals before they end up doing what they want. They kind of take off on their own. And then you have another layer of problems besides the goals that you pray. The placebo effect is in action in your subconscious mind, and that has another whole agenda, so that's pushing for another effect. So you have competing goals in your consciousness, and this is the one of the reasons that the effects of prayer can be so confusing to people, because they don't realize that what they are thinking consciously is being influenced not only by their unconscious, but it's also being influenced by the placebo effect. Now, sometimes you're lucky because sometimes the placebo effect and what you want to do are overlapping. And when you have that, then you have a very powerful goal-directed prayer because now you have the placebo effect going in the same direction as your goals, and they push and achieve something. And it may be a good thing or maybe a bad thing, but it's a powerful effect either way. We call this at Spindrift the piggyback effect. That's when you get a double dose of effects. And that you can read too, and that's very powerful. It's easier to do a goal-directed prayer than a non-goal-directed prayer because we're programmed that way as human beings to have goals.
What about the amount of people? Will one person praying do as well as a million people praying for the same thing?
I gave a talk at a conference on that subject. If people go to the website, SpindriffResearch.org, under documents, I have a speech there about comparing the individual versus the group. And groups are very powerful. The thing you have to do with groups, though, is to make sure everybody's on the same page. There are a lot of instances where we can point to the effect of having an effect on weather, for instance. But people, unfortunately, they're praying, they haven't all gotten together and decided how they're going to approach this. So they're all doing a little bit of a different thing. And like the placebo effect competing with the goal, direct effect within one individual. This is multiplied many times when you have the group. So you want to make sure you're on the same page. Or what happens is that you may, for instance, help the weather in one area, but over in another area, you're going to have terrible weather. You're going to have a drought. You're going to have a flood. And these are the side effects of goal thinking. Well, I want this to happen, but when you do this, then there's the other effects that happen. And that's why there's much more of an advantage of a group, if it could do it, to pray with a non-goal in mind. They could all have the same loving intention of doing that together. There have been some experiments where, in Washington, D.C., where a group of Zen Buddhists got together and they determined that they were going to pray for the crime rate in that area, and they did, and their crime rate went down. But after a while, it went up again. But the point is that they were a group, they had a powerful prayer, and they were on the same page. And that's what you want to do. So we think of at Spindrift of people going on teams. You know, if you're an effective goal-directed person, then you should be grouped with another group of people who are goal-directed in their orientation. And then if you're non-goal-directed, you should be with them. It's kind of like having two different teams playing basketball. You just make sure you're on the right team, because if you're That's on the right. wrong team, then you're conflicting with each other.
What did you conclude about the various prayers in terms of effectiveness?
Well, we would define effectiveness as achieving the norms for the plants or the norms for whatever experiment we're doing. So the people that were able to pray and get a result where the norms were being reached, order is returned to the organism, that would be considered effective prayer. The people who didn't do that but were still having an effect, they were still having a psychic effect, which is kind of a wild claim all in itself, even though they weren't getting the prayer effect, it would be considered desirable or beneficial. They still were showing that there is a paranormal effect going on. But effective prayer lines an organism up with its norms and what is best for it. That's what we would consider it to be. And it's easier to do this in a controlled environment than praying for the whole world. I mean, there's so many things going on today that we don't know what our prayers are doing. It doesn't look like anything's working with the mess out there in the news.
Well, that I want to talk about that, Bill, when we come back, and because, again, that hones in on effectiveness indeed. But what about those who pray for evil? Does that work too? We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Indeed, indeed. And that is Christian Wild that you hear from the Holiday Magic Coast Style CD, which you can get. Christian donated his time and voice and energy for the veterans' charities. Simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, click the picture of the CD, and you can order it straight through amazon.com. And wishing all of you a Merry Christmas, let's check in with Miss Ouija Board, Karen Dahlman. Hello, Karen. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, George, and a Merry Christmases to all the Coast listeners. My wish for you and for everybody else in honor of the spirit and goodwill this season is that we receive the gift of peace within, so peace may become our world. To you, George, and the Coast listeners, have a peaceful and golden New Year ahead in 2015.
Got it, Karen. Thank you so much. And we'll come back more with Bill Sweet next hour. We'll take your phone calls as we talk about prayer and intention on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with Bill Sweet, by the way, author of A Journey into Prayer. Bill, we're talking about the intention of prayer, whether one was as strong as many, but what, and you were talking about the state of the condition of the planet right now, and it doesn't seem like people's prayers are being heard or answered. But can't, what about if there's a group of people out there who their mission is evil? Can they too affect the outcome that way if they pray for evil?
Well, yes, they can. And it seems that even some people who actually have good intentions are so stirred up emotionally now because of what's going on in the divides in this country presently. The problem in the near old Missouri, and that started it, and also the North Korea thing. All this is, some people are praying negatively and they don't even know it, but then other people can do it and they actually are very good at it. It seems from our Spindrift work, unfortunately, sadly, that it's easier to lob a negative prayer at something than a positive prayer. And again, this is because of the agendas and what's going on in the subconscious and unconscious minds. And we have to be really cognizant of what we're thinking, making sure our thoughts are purified and spiritual, because whatever we think we're doing consciously, no matter how you look at it, it's coming from the unconscious mind. Our skills, our beliefs, all those things are going on unconsciously. And the first Bourne Identity movie with Matt Damon, you remember he lost his memory but as a CIA agent, but every time he needed it to needed to protect himself in a situation, he had all these karate skills that would come up, or he would have all these intelligent ideas come to him how to get out of a situation. He didn't know where they were coming from, but they were coming from his unconscious mind. They were all skill sets down there, and they surfaced when he needed them. It's the same thing with praying correctly, too. We need to make sure that our thoughts are full of love and good intentions, so that when we are called to help out in a situation, that we aren't going to voice something else out there like anger instead. I mean, today, we look at people who are calling out racism, hate threats, kill, and we want change now and all this. And if we're into prayer, we don't want to get caught up in that. We don't want to catch that. That wave of prayer won't do any good for us. In fact, it'll send us in the wrong direction. We'll just get caught up in it. We should pray about what is underneath it all, what is going on the unconscious level. We should ask ourselves, what is the subtext? What's underneath all this outrage? And it's outrage, fear, political correct thinking, and animal instinct. The prayer that we should be addressing now is the animal instinct and the animal nature that is coming out in man. This is a step backwards. The animal in man is what is driving this disorder now. If we can't see the unconscious going on here, we are in for big trouble. And
now,
we have been under the impression that man is advanced, but, you know, if the majority of people choose to go back to the old lawless nature of man, we better nail the door shut.
You have talked about using the Faraday cage that blocks certain electronic signals. Tell me about that. Tell me how it was used.
That's very interesting. We have, in our Spindrift experiments, have used our volunteers in some cases would step inside of a Faraday cage, and that is really quite an interesting thing. Faraday cages are used to completely block out electromagnetic interference and from radio, television, cell phones, anything coming in. And what happens there is, if you're inside of that, you can tell it because your mind is clear. And it's not just the placebo effect. You actually are a little clearer. And Spindrift theorizes that maybe one of the reasons that people today aren't quite as effective at prayer and spiritual and psychic things as maybe they were naturally a couple hundred years ago. This is speculation, though. It's because 150 years ago, we didn't have this permeation of our atmosphere with innumerable millions of signals from satellites, radar, cell phones. All these things that are going on around us are going through us, our minds and bodies, and that can't be a good thing at some level. So when you get inside a Faraday cage, or a cave, by the way, it completely blocks us out, and it's an amazing feeling to be inside a Faraday cage. It's a terrific feeling of peace. It's probably close as we can get to maybe what nature was like to be in before we had remote broadcasting and things. And it's closer to nature. So it's very interesting. Now, what it does, I'll probably just tell you what it does. What we found it does is that when a person is inside the Faraday cage praying, they have their results they get are a little bit tighter, a little bit more refined. And we figure that maybe that's because the person praying himself is a little bit more refined. He's not picking up the noise and interference that he usually does. I mean, we're in such a noisy society today, we're just immune to it. If we had been brought up in the countryside and came to the city, I mean, that would really shake us up. But we're so used to it, we don't even know what's happening.
Bill,
now, I'll tell you something interesting on that, too. A little trivia thing. Do you know, back when 9/11 happened, I think that this silence is golden is actually true, because we're so used to the noise around us affecting us, we don't notice it. I noticed that the best sound I ever heard from my stereo system was right after 9/11. And I thought, well, what's going on here? Maybe because its adrenaline's gone or whatever. And then I realized that there were no airplanes in the air. And we live kind of near
that's
an airport.
Right.
And the airplanes were actually setting up molecules and movement and shaking things up and creating a low level of noise that I never noticed before. And that was shaking the equipment. And I noticed that when I played my drum set, that the drums sounded sparkly and new and fresh. I thought, what is going on here? And it was because everything was so quiet in the background. And then when the airplanes took off again, everything went back to the way it was.
I want to read you an article that was in a newspaper back many years ago, and I want you to react and tell us what the heck is happening here. A father and son in Salem, Oregon, apparently despondent that their attempt to scientifically prove the value of prayer was not embraced by the First Church of Christ, scientists and others, brought two shotguns and killed themselves in a rural part of the state. Bruce Klingbeil, 65, mailed a letter to his daughter, Deborah Rose, in Philadelphia, telling them about the suicides. He and his son, John, 35, then drove from Salem to a rural area, parked their pickup truck, and took their lives. Are these the same people that were in Spindrift?
Yeah, these were the two people that started Spindrift, and I was the last to speak with them. And they had just approved on the phone with me and another person earlier, two speeches they were going to give at two conferences. So, I mean, it was a complete shock. And when this happened, my family thought that maybe I was in trouble as being the spokesman for Spindrift. So there was that concern, too. And it just happens that everyone has an interpretation of what happened. When you read the history page at the Spindrift website, there's the three interpretations of what happened. Some people think, like the police, that it's just a clear-cut suicide. Other people think that there were sinister forces involved influencing them. I would be in that category.
Were they murdered, you think?
Well, here's the thing. This goes on. What is the physical evidence says suicide, but does that explain everything? It's just like your commercial earlier about the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
Kennedy assassination on the surface looked like one guy did it, but how many millions of people have a gut feeling that it doesn't tell the whole story?
Well, lots of them now.
And the gut feeling is your subconscious. So the thing is that I believe that it was a suicide, but what brought it about to make them do it? How were they manipulated into it? That's what is going to be.
Well, because on the face of it, Bill, who would kill themselves over the lack of peer approval of their work? So what, you know?
Well, this might relate to your whole program tonight. You would think that it wouldn't bother anybody, but it actually, the Spindrift story, when you read my book, A Journey into Prayer, there's a lot in there about the hate mail and the people who got angry at us.
Oh, yeah.
You wouldn't think, it's actually the story more than the experiments. I have talked to people and friends that are more interested in the drama around Spindrift than the experiments. So to this day, I don't think I have any friends that can tell me anything about the experiments. They just know about all these strange things we were doing. It's just bizarre, and I can give you an example maybe of your question, exactly your question. I think your question is, why would this bother anybody, right?
Exactly, to a point where you'd kill yourself.
Well, if that's what happened.
If that's what happened.
I was had a newspaper reporter ask me, and he said, why would anybody be against testing prayer? And I asked the reporter a question first. I said, well, how would you feel if it could be scientifically shown that there was a spiritual power larger than you which worked through you? The reporter said this, well, I feel it would feel very uncomfortable finding out about that. I don't believe in God or anything else having a power over me outside of myself. I don't want to have anything outside of me control me. So personally, I would not want to find out that such a power was out there and could do that to me. And I asked the reporter, then can you see at least one reason why some people would be against testing prayer? A light bulb flashed on in the reporter's mind and eyes. I could see it. She exclaimed, I got it. We human beings want to be in control. I said, you hit the nail on the head.
Well, this has got to be, this aspect of it, very frustrating for you, because I think they were onto something with their work.
Well, fortunately, a lot of their work was documented, and it is showing the subtle effects in modest tests that thought and prayer does something. Just to show that that is a psychic effect is one thing, but to actually show that there's a qualitative difference, there's different qualities of thought that produce different kind of results, this is a whole other type of quantification for science. And to get quality and quantity together, you were talking earlier, too, about that. Why aren't we looking at these different levels of consciousness and things? Well, that's what we were trying to do at Spindrum. Mm-hmm. And even though it's been frustrating, it's been fun, too. Now, sometimes I do wonder, George, if I hadn't gotten involved in this, would I have had a happier existence? And, you know, we don't know that. We don't know the alternate realities we could have gone through. But it sure has been an interesting ride. And what we're talking about now, the sociology of it has been fascinating. I tell in my book, for instance, at the beginning of one of the chapters, that a friend of mine who was trying to be open-minded, trying to be nice, I told him about Spindrift and the experiments, praying for the experiments and the showing different kinds of results, you know, no result, and a Goldrich result, not a Goldrich result. And after I was done, he said to me, Bill, what you're saying sounds interesting, but I think it should be worked out in therapy first. Yeah, that's his attempt to be nice.
Jeez.
He really meant it, too.
Well, let's talk about intention, which is very close to prayer. And we have done some intention experiments, Bill, on the show, and I'm pretty sure they've worked. You know, whether we've slowed down hurricanes or made it rain, I think it's worked. But here's my question. You had brought up something about, look at the state of the world right now,
right.
And we know people are praying. We know they're sending out intention.
Right.
Is it possible that this prayer or intention only works for certain things and that it really can't stop wars or things like that?
Well, on the theory page of Spindrift, there's a description of what we call indirect prayer. And a lot of people pray indirectly for different things, and they don't really have a target in mind of what they're praying for, so it's kind of like a buckshot. It's going out and spreading out and not hitting things, and that's how a lot of this prayer is going out now. If we had more of a focus, we would see better results. But then again, that's another reason that Spindrift did our experiments on a modest level and on a lower level, so we could see what's going on. You can't see what's going on in the big picture. But I do believe, religiously and spiritually, there's enough good thought in the world holding the thin veneer on civilization. And, you know, it's a thin veneer, and I would hope it wouldn't fall apart. But I can only believe that. I can't prove that. And I think that through inductive thinking, moving from the effects we see changing on after we pray and we work up to a principle that we don't see, that's inductive thinking, we can conclude that way, which is more of a thought experiment, that prayer is working and intention is working. But until we really see it done in the laboratory, we won't convince too many people in science of that. But it is certainly something that we want to continue doing, even though we don't always see the results of it. It kind of reminds me of the rabbi who was talking to the boy who was going through bar mitzvah, and the bar mitzvah was, you know, I don't believe any of this. But the rabbi said, well, you just keep on practicing this and rehearsing this in your mind, and someday you will see the good from it, even though you don't believe it now. So I think we have to keep these things up. There is a little bit of a dearth of spiritual thinking now, I think, because we're sort of overwhelmed about what's going on around us. But we hope that we can, we all hope that we can turn that around. But then again, we're, you know, we're looking at the obvious, what is in front of us. And what we should do in prayer, and this would help the group prayer term, group intention. We should affirm the spiritual gems in man and woman to stir their unconscious mind up so it surfaces in the conscious man. More people would be more conscious of who they are spiritually, and getting rid of the animal man, this would be a great step for mankind. What it would also do is it would help people see they are connected. I think part of the division today is that people don't see they're connected. They see people in different groups, in different racial groups, in different categories, the 99% and the 1%. All these things are divisive. We don't see how we are connected. So what we found at Spindrift is that we're not praying about the obvious. We're praying about the unobvious. We're not addressing conscious thoughts. We're addressing unconscious thoughts. One of the things, too, that I learned just from my background, from knowing several Christian Science practitioners, is that they always advise when you're thinking about a problem, what is the subtext? What is the subtext? What is going on underneath us in the unconscious mind? We don't pray about the obvious, but the unobvious that we don't see. Practitioners don't pray about what's going on in the conscious mind. They pray about what's going on in the unconscious mind. This is a whole new approach. People don't realize it. People usually pray about what they're looking at and see and they know, but no, it's the big action is what's going on unconsciously. Now, this is kind of interesting, too. What did Jesus say about the unconscious? It's the Christmas show you're having, after all. We should probably mention Jesus. Mm-hmm. He did in the music. It was great. Mary Baker Eddy, who started Christian Science, wrote, Jesus of Nazareth was the most scientific man that ever trod the globe. He plunged beneath the material surface of things and found the spiritual cause. Jesus said, look beneath the surface so you can judge correctly. That's John 7:24. Look beneath the surface so you can judge correctly. That's the type of thinking we need at this time, because people are just looking at what's going on around them with their eyes and ears, and they can't understand that underneath that is what needs to be changed.
That's right. Bill, we're coming back to take phone calls with you in our final hour. Plus, we're going to end the program with, of course, our Christmas tradition, Letter from Michael.